Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
Janis Joplin, the 27-year-old pop singer or rock singer who took little more than 3 years to get to the top, was found dead yesterday in her Hollywood apartment.
Janis Joplin was a true rock and roll icon. Her explosive performances electrified audiences around the world. Known for her unique, powerful blues-inspired voice, she blazed a trail like no woman before her.
I think that it is not stretching the point to say Janis was the first female superstar of rock.
Janis fully embraced the rock and roll spirit of the age and had a music career that was going stratospheric.
She was recording a new album. She had a great band. I thought things were really going to open up for her.
But on October 4th, 1970, at the height of her fame, Janis Joplin died alone in her Los Angeles hotel. Her body lay undiscovered for 18 hours. The press came to one conclusion for the wild woman of rock.
The coroner said she died of an overdose of drugs.
Janis undoubtedly lived the rock and roll lifestyle of a 60s music icon. The official verdict was that she died of a drug overdose. But in my experience, it's never that simple. The autopsy was carried out almost 50 years ago, and I'm going to re-examine all of the evidence to determine exactly what happened to Janis Joplin on the night that she died.
Dr. Michael Hunter is a world-renowned forensic pathologist. He's performed over 4,000 autopsies to investigate and reveal the cause of death. Today, he's the chief medical examiner in one of America's biggest cities.
This is Janis Joplin's autopsy report. And the information contained inside will allow me to build a picture of her final days and hours and help me find exactly why this young, talented musician died so suddenly.
October 1st, 1970, Los Angeles, 3 days before Janis's death. She's in the Sunset Sound recording studio with her latest band. After a double platinum-selling album with her first group, Big Brother and the Holding Company, Janis is now focusing on solo material.
Writing a song of great social and political import.
However, technical difficulties are holding up recording of the album, and Janis decides to entertain the band with an impromptu performance of a song she's been working on.
Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
It was a quarter-inch tape running all the time so that you might get something that you'd otherwise miss.
John Byrne Cook, road manager.
And she did the whole song.
The feeling in the studio is that this is a return to form for Janis, who's had a turbulent time since Going It Alone.
And she was so energized and positive. It was like you get to see this is what Janis Joplin can be.
So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes?
This recording of Mercedes-Benz is the last one Janis ever makes.
Janis was just 27 years old when she died. And I would have expected some type of physical trauma to be associated with that death. But on first glance of the report, I see nothing.
Janis Lynn Joplin was born on the 19th of January, 1943, in Port Arthur, an affluent oil town on the Texan Gulf Coast. The eldest of three siblings, her early childhood was happy. But as Janis matured, her unconventional taste in fashion and rebellious ways made her few friends. She found solace in music and discovered she could sing. Seduced by the emerging counterculture, the
age of 23, Janis left Texas for San Francisco. There, she was asked to try out for fledgling rock band, Big Brother and the Holding Company.
We were rehearsing, and Chet brought her, and she was wearing, like, shorts and sandals and had her hair kind of back in a bun, and she had very bad skin. She had acne really bad, and she was very plain-looking.
But it was Janis's unique sound, as heard in this early performance footage, that made her an instant hit with the group.
Dave Getz, drummer and friend.
And the minute she started singing was incredible.
Janis modeled her voice on black blues singers like Bessie Smith and Odetta.
And it's just like nobody had heard anything like this. The white girls sing the blues.
It wasn't just Janis's singing voice that won over her new bandmates.
She was like a really interesting, funny, intelligent person. Humorous, really a great sense of humor.
And it was the band's appearance at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 that propelled Janis to international stardom.
And it felt like a ball and chain.
As this clip shows, her unique performance electrified the crowd.
The Mama Cass was there, and you can read her lips, and she goes, wow, and she turns to this guy next to her, she says, that's really heavy.
The next thing I notice in the autopsy is that Janis has multiple tattoos on her body. She has a tattoo of a bracelet on her left wrist, a flower on her right heel, and a small heart over her left breast.
April 1970. Marin County. 6 months before her death, Janis is hosting a party at her home in Larkspur, California. She's being inked by celebrated tattoo artist Lyle Tuttle.
Chris Sailwitz, author, 27, Janis Joplin.
She told a reporter once that the tattoo on her wrist was for everyone, for the entire world, but that the tattoo on her left breast was a little treat for the boys, a little icing on the cake.
No, it doesn't come off at all.
It's real?
I have another one, too.
Who wants to put the next question?
Janis's libido was legendary.
Powell St. John, college friend.
She would scour the crowd and grab some little guy and stuff him in the limousine and take him back to the hotel. And not many people did that.
Janis just liked sex, whether it be with a male or a female.
She did have a lot of relationships because she was very needy. She was a very needy person, no question about it.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
A lot of people enjoy many sexual partners. It's about being sexually adventurous, sort of exploring one's own sexuality. In Janis's case, it may also have been about a need to fill a void. There's some pain there that she's trying to avoid with the sex.
Janis's autopsy shows that she was using a contraceptive coil at the time of her death. But I've also found evidence that Janis hadn't always used contraception. She had a procedure to terminate a pregnancy in 1968. At this time in America, abortions were illegal in most states, and she would have had to have traveled to someplace like Mexico in order to get the procedure done. Medically, this would have put Janis at some degree of risk, given that the clinical standards were usually so low.
January 1968, Los Angeles, nearly 3 years before her death. Janis is in her dressing room preparing to go on stage.
Booking agent Todd Schiffman finds her on the floor and unable to stand.
Abdominal pain following an abortion is a dangerous sign, and it may indicate an infection of the womb, which is a common complication following an abortion that has gone wrong.
Despite the obvious discomfort and against advice, Janice still goes on stage.
But I can also see from the reports that soon after the collapse, Janice received treatment at a clinic in San Francisco to correct the original problem. Whatever killed Janice, it wasn't a complication associated with a mishandled abortion. But I have to consider the psychological impact of this.
After the abortion, Janice Joplin became quite depressed. She's told a female friend that she really regretted having had this done.
So this was a traumatic time in her life, so it's not surprising if she ended up feeling things like stress and anxiety.
I can't be sure what was going on in Janice's head the night that she died, and I can't be sure what the psychological impact was of her abortion. But that was 3 years prior to her death. So I don't think that this is enough to cause Janice to do something rash. There is something, however, in the coroner's report that makes me think Janice had bigger psychological problems than I realized.
Legendary singer Janice Joplin is found dead in her hotel room in Los Angeles, aged just 27. The First Lady of Rock and Roll appeared to be riding high on her meteoric rise to the top, but Dr. Hunter has found evidence that suggests otherwise.
In the coroner's report, I can see that they found a number of prescription pills called Dalmane in Janice's room. This is a prescription medication used to treat insomnia as well as anxiety. Dalmane is a benzodiazepine, a sedative in the same class as Xanax and Valium. It works by triggering the release of a chemical in the brain called GABA, which slows down the brain's activity, helping you to relax and fall asleep. If you take too many, the brain shuts down and the body forgets to breathe.
One of the things that Janice did throughout her life was to self-medicate, to escape from difficult feelings.
Did Janice self-medicate one step too far and overdose on sleeping pills?
Janice's depressive moods can be linked even further back than her unwanted pregnancy.
She was by nature an outcast. She did not feel that she belonged in Port Arthur, Texas, where she was born and raised.
Janice Joplin always wanted to be different. Even before she was a teenager, she was wearing men's shirts, she's dyeing her hair, she has extremely liberal views on race in a segregated city. She was a target for people who wanted to abuse her.
Surrounded by friends in high school?
They laughed me out of class, out of town, and out of the state.
When someone's bullied really badly as a child, they begin to wonder what's wrong with them. And if it's not resolved, if it's not dealt with, then not surprisingly, this can lead to problems later in life.
Yearning for acceptance and to mix with like-minded people, Janice went to college to study art at the University of Texas at Austin.
She wanted to be accepted not only as a great performer and artist, but as a person, too. That second one was a little harder to achieve.
But it was there that she found herself on the receiving end of a callous prank, which would scar Janice for life. October 1962, Austin, Texas. Every fall, the Alpha Phi Omega fraternity holds a charity event to vote for the ugliest man on campus. As a cruel joke, this year, the award goes to Janis.
Well, when Janis won the Ugliest Man on Campus prize, and she found out about it, and burst into tears. That was the first time I realized how profoundly Janis had been affected by her social problems in her hometown. She was heartbroken. Heartbroken by a bunch of frat rats.
Experiencing what she did at high school and then later on in college would have had a profound effect on her sense of identity, on her body image, and drawing from that, then probably on her self-esteem. It's undoubtedly something that will have affected her and stayed with her for a long time.
Although Janis may have been battling depression, when I look at the toxicology section of the autopsy report, it shows that there is no signs of Dalmaine in her system. And although it was found at the scene, I don't believe that this played any role whatsoever in her death. But I still have questions about her mental state and the amount of stress she was under.
October 3rd, 1970, 12 p.m., 13 and a half hours before her death. Janis is in her room at the Landmark Hotel in Hollywood while her band are in the studio. She's not needed as they're recording an instrumental track for the new album.
Janis liked being in the studio working. She didn't like not being in the studio working. Those were the times she found really boring. I mean, you know, you can hang around your hotel room just so long. And she got lonely and bored, and I think we can say in times like that she got self-indulgent.
It was no secret that Janis was a drinker, and I can tell from the autopsy report that she did have alcohol in her system at the time of her death.
Alone in her room with hours to kill, Janis begins to drink.
Janis's lifestyle really consists of every day she gets so out of it on booze, and she will start admitting to her friends she has no memory whatsoever of the shows that she's played.
So was it Janis's legendary appetite for drink that ultimately led to her premature death?
You know, we're in a time right now where technology has shown how far we've truly come. I mean, you can order a pizza from your phone. You can use your laptop to connect with family and friends. It's really impressive how easily we're able to stay connected in so many different ways with all of the different advancements. But one thing has been the same, coloring our hair. The options are either go to a traditional salon, spend lots of time and money, or just grab a box of hair color at the drugstore, which you never quite know what color you're going to get. It almost always dries out my hair. It's just not the best option. But now there's a new way, Madison Reed. It took a strong woman to shake up the hair coloring worlds, and Amy Arrett did just that with Madison Reed, the company she named after her daughter, which is really awesome. And if you're thinking, okay, but how do I match my color? Don't worry, Madison Reed gives you all the tools you need so you can color with confidence. Get ammonia-free, multidimensional hair color delivered right to your door, starting at $22. Visit madison-reed.com. That's madison-reed.com. And now, Autopsy listeners can get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Use code LASTHOURS. That's code LASTHOURS.
Rock and roll superstar Janis Joplin is found dead in a Los Angeles hotel, age just 27. Speculation about what killed her has circulated ever since. Now, forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has the autopsy report and will use it to reveal what happened to Janis in the last days and hours of her life.
I've already discounted an overdose by sleeping pills, but we do know on the night that she died, she was drinking. And I can see here that she has a 0.11% of alcohol in her system. That's enough to make her intoxicated.
Well, the booze thing was something she came to Austin with. She wasn't addicted.
My advice is everyone come to California and I'll buy you a drink.
Gosh, she was 18. Didn't have much time to be alcoholic, but she was on the way.
On stage, Janice's drinking was all too obvious. She even had a favorite brand of liquor and made sure to capitalize on it.
She contacted Southern Comfort, the makers of the drink, and persuaded them to get her a luxury Russian Lynx coat as a reward for the promotion she'd given for their drink. Then later she said, "That was a great hustle. Can you imagine getting paid for passing out every night for 2 years?"
The autopsy also reveals that Janice's liver weighed 2,050 grams, and that's almost 40% bigger than normal. It's also described as fatty, and that's a sure sign of chronic alcohol abuse. Over time, this can develop into life-threatening cirrhosis, which is scarring of the liver. The organ is no longer able to function and shuts down, resulting in the buildup of dangerous toxins, which can be fatal. I need to find out why Janice was drinking to such a dangerous level and if this abuse led to her death.
Janice's drinking escalated after leaving her first band, Big Brother and the Holding Company, in 1968.
Making the decision to leave Big Brother had a tremendously unsettling effect on Janice because she was leaving this familiar situation and these guys that she loved and launching into the unknown.
A letter home to her family reveals the uncertainty she felt at this time.
"I told you, you remember, that I was going to leave Big Brother and to do a thing of my own. There'll be a whole lot of pressure because of the vibes created and also how big I am now. So we got to be super when we start playing."
One of the things that this family provided was a defense against her own demons. When Janice leaves the group, one of the things that she also leaves is the comfort that they provided her, the protection that they provided her from her own thoughts and whatever difficulty she was having in her life. They were that close. So she needs to use something else.
But critics savage Janice's new group, the Cosmic Blues Band. The knockbacks hit Janice hard.
She is nothing like as centered as she was in Big Brother. And the natural response is, you know, to drink more.
I believe Janice may have been addicted to alcohol, but when I look through her report, there's nothing that suggests that she developed cirrhosis. Therefore, I don't believe any of the effects on the liver are responsible ultimately for her death. I found something in the coroner's report that tells me that Janice was fighting a battle with something more than just alcohol. The autopsy states that there were 4.5 pills labeled Lily 172 found in a drawer in Janice's room. I believe these pills were wrongly labeled because I can't find mention of these in any drug reference. What I can find is a pill labeled J72, and that's methadone, and that's a drug typically prescribed to heroin users who are trying to kick the habit. I can also see that the medical examiner noted what appeared to be old needle injection wounds, and this is clear evidence of past heroin use. And it's likely that she's trying to stop.
I think Janice transitioned into heroin sometime in 1967 when she started to date and go out with a guy. He was younger than her, probably by a couple of years at least. And he was a pretty boy. That's when she started doing heroin.
When I began to see Janice's drug use as regular, was during the Cosmic Blues year. And the routine would be that she would, after the gig, go to the hotel as soon as possible to get off.
So heroin would have been perfect drug of choice because it would have offered an escape to Janice, an escape from her past, an escape from the worries of having to be this icon overnight, an escape from, you know, her feelings that it was hard to connect with people around her, her escape from anything she worried about. It's a perfect drug.
At the height of her heroin use, Janice was spending up to $1,500 every 3 days.
Between 1968 and the end of 1969, she overdosed on heroin on 6 occasions.
January 1970, Rio, Brazil. Janice is taking some time out after quitting the Cosmic Blues Band. The bad reviews and heavy drink and drug use have taken their toll. It's there she meets an American traveler.
David Niehaus, who was somebody who didn't know who she was and just really liked her for what she was.
David also helped her kick heroin.
David Niehaus put her on his motorcycle and took her off into the jungle and got her straight.
Coming off heroin is a very painful process, and the methadone she was taking would have helped her with the difficulty of withdrawal.
Like all of us, I think she was always looking for the right person. And anybody that's going to take the time to help Janice get straight, that's fine with me.
Janice returned from Brazil, clean and in a stable relationship.
Heroin is one of the most addictive drugs there is. Addicts are drawn to the intense euphoric high when taking it. But the crashing lows they feel after it's worn off, combined with the intense pain of withdrawal, causes that addict to go running back for more. As Janice was known to have used heroin for over 3 years, she would have had a very substantial addiction to heroin. Anybody who's trying to break free of a heroin addiction, it's one of the hardest things they will ever do. But for Janice, she is surrounded by this culture that practically encourages its use. And therefore, I would think that it would almost be impossible.
March 1970, Marin County. 7 months before her death. Janice and David are living together in Janice's home in Larkspur. After a 2-day skiing trip, David returns home but finds Janice in bed with another woman, a former lover named Peggy Caserta.
Well, Janice Joplin and Peggy Caserta were great friends, but they were also lovers. I would say there's a large part of the relationship was the heroin that they mutually ingested.
David Niehaus left her, saying, "I will not be around you when you're doing this to yourself anymore."
In David, she had found somebody that cared about her, you know, arguably sort of the first individual that really saw her and connected with her and cared about her.
Losing David hit Janice hard and gave her the wake-up call she needed.
And that's what it took. You can't make somebody stop. They have got to want to do it. And during that winter and spring, Janice got to the point where she got serious. And she got clean.
Absolutely believed her. I knew I was telling the truth. I mean, I can tell the difference. I know. I know the difference. I can tell because I've been there. And, you know, it takes one to know one.
But Dr. Hunter has found evidence to suggest otherwise.
Although Janice had methadone in her room when she died, the toxicology report shows that there is no evidence of this drug in her system. This tells me that Janice didn't take this drug on the day that she died or the several days leading up to her death, because it's typically found in the urine several days and even up to a week following ingestion. And there's something else in the autopsy that would suggest that Janice's battle was far from over.
But what your little addiction demon says to you is, see, you can handle it. So now you could just give yourself a little taste.
Legendary 60s rock icon Janis Joplin was found dead in a hotel room in Los Angeles. Her sudden death made headlines around the world. Now, forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has her autopsy report, and he's using it to finally reveal how Janis died.
I've already ruled out a drug overdose from sleeping pills and alcohol abuse for cause of death. But the discovery of 4.5 tablets of the heroin substitute methadone found in her room, it's clear that Janis was fighting a serious addiction to heroin.
But Dr. Hunter has found evidence that suggests Janis was losing the fight.
The toxicology report confirms that Janis had not taken methadone for a number of days. However, I found a vital clue in the autopsy. There's evidence of needle marks in her left arm with sufficient healing to suggest that she'd injected within the last 3 weeks prior to her death.
3:30 p.m., October 3rd, 1970, 10 hours before her death. Janis has been drinking in her room for several hours, and she decides to call a drug dealer. He arrives and hands over a small package containing heroin. Janis places the package into a drawer and gets ready to go into the studio.
After working so hard to break her habit, why did she stop using methadone and start once again using heroin?
September 1970, Los Angeles, 3 weeks before her death. Janis is in the lobby of the Landmark Hotel. While there, she bumps into her old drug dealer. He tells her that he's there to supply her friend, Peggy Caserta.
Peggy Caserta was staying at the Landmark Hotel in Los Angeles at the same time as Janis, but Janis was completely unaware of this. In fact, she hadn't seen Peggy for some 3 months. She was being serious about making an effort to break free from the people with whom she would do heroin, with whom she would do smack.
In this interview, Peggy Caserta explains what happened next.
She called the room and she said, "Bring me some." And I said, "No." And she said, "Don't think that if you don't give me some, I can't get it, because I can get it the same way you got it. So bring me some. Let's get high." We did. And she started using again.
Janis was trapped in this cycle of addiction and therefore self-destruction. So no matter how many good things were happening, this, you know, the hold this heroin, the hold that this addiction had on her always kept her coming back. She may have thought that she could control her addiction, but ultimately it was her addiction controlling her, and that was the danger.
Drugs have a powerful effect on memory centers in the brain. The act of seeing the dealer would have triggered a flood of the feel-good chemical dopamine. This leads to a positive association with the memory of what heroin feels like, and therefore an intense craving. With this knowledge, it can come as no surprise that Janis once again turned to heroin. And my next discovery confirms this. The toxicology report reveals that Janis had morphine in her blood and in her bile. And that's what heroin breaks down to in the body. This is indisputable evidence that Janis Joplin had used heroin on the night that she died.
October 4th, 12:30 a.m., 1 hour before her death. Janis is in Barney's Beanery, a late-night bar on Santa Monica Boulevard. She has a last drink and goes back to the Landmark Hotel. 1 a.m., Janis is back in her room. Realizing she's out of cigarettes, she walks to the front desk and gets change for the machine. The hotel manager is the last person to see her alive. 1:15 a.m., Janis returns to her room and reaches for the heroin she purchased earlier.
The heroin is now in Janis's bloodstream and circulating throughout her body.
...1:30 a.m. Janice then begins to undress.
By now, Janice is feeling the sedative effects of the heroin. She passes out, grazing her lips on the nightstand as she falls.
From this point on, no one will ever fully know what happened, as her body is undiscovered for 18 hours. 7:30 p.m. later that day. Road manager John Cook arrives to check on Janice, as she's failed to turn up for a recording session at the studio. He finds her cold on the floor.
I had this very distinct feeling that nobody was there. And, in fact, nobody was there, but there was Janice's body. I went over and touched her. And the spirit was long gone. I mean, this was not living flesh. I mean, at this moment, I'm the only person in the world that knows. And I can't carry that for very long.
At 9:10 p.m. on October 4th, Janis Joplin was pronounced dead at the scene.
Janis Joplin, the 27-year-old pop singer or rock singer who took little more than 3 years to get to the top, was found dead yesterday in her Hollywood apartment.
I found out about it on the 10 o'clock news. Hard thing to hear. Tears, for sure.
And for me, it was a real shock. I really felt it like I lost a sister, kind of like that. That's about the closest I could describe it.
I am still left with one major question, as I am not convinced that Janice's death was from a simple drug overdose. Janice was a seasoned drug user with a history of surviving overdoses. When the coroner arrived on scene, the heroin that they identified in the red package, they note to be a very small amount. Certainly not the amount one would have expected a seasoned heroin user to overdose on. So, what killed her? The answer may lie in the unnatural position in which she was found. The autopsy shows me that Janice had livor mortis on the left side of her body and on the right side of her face. Livor mortis is a discoloration that occurs in dependent areas of the body following death. When the heart stops pumping, heavy red blood cells sink due to gravity and indicate which areas of the body are in contact with the ground. The position that she landed in would have caused her neck to twist and possibly obstruct her airway. And a death like this is called positional asphyxia.
Did the heroin cause Janice to pass out in a position that restricted her breathing to the extent she suffocated? Janice Joplin died suddenly in her Hollywood hotel on the 4th of October, 1970. Dr. Michael Hunter has been examining the autopsy and has discovered that Janice injected heroin the night she died. But he's not yet satisfied this is the full story. He believes the position in which she was found could explain her death.
She had fallen off the bed. She was in a very awkward and unnatural position on the floor.
Identifying positional asphyxia is highly scene dependent, and it requires the coroner going to the scene and interpreting the features of this. But looking at the autopsy report, I find no indication that this was actually done. So I'm going to discount this as a cause of Janice's death. Which brings me back to Janice's battle with heroin. Could her death have been caused by the fact that she just recently started using heroin again? A major cause of heroin overdose is returning to the drug after a period of abstinence. Often, the user will miscalculate the dose, not realizing their tolerance had dropped, and this can be fatal.
I assumed that she made a mistake that many a junkie has made, which is, for some reason or other, to give themselves a special reward or, you know, like to go back to a dose that they had used when they were using more frequently.
But I don't think this is the case. I have found a crucial piece of evidence that I think tells me exactly why Janice died. And it shows me that Janice had no control over the dose that she was administering to herself.
On the afternoon Janice purchases the heroin, she has no way of knowing that the drug she's going to use later has a deadly difference.
This piece of evidence is not found in the autopsy report, but within a note written several years later by one of the medical examiners. He states he analyzed the contents of the red package that was found in Janice's room, and his findings are shocking. The lethal drug was not of normal street purity of 3 to 5%. The drug that Janice injected had a purity of up to 50%. Janice may have used an amount of drug that she's injected in the past, but because of the drug's strength and her recent abstinence, she didn't stand a chance.
Janice's drug dealer was reported to always have his heroin tested by a chemist to ensure it wasn't a lethal batch.
That weekend, however, the chemist who tested the heroin was out of town. Accordingly, it's not just Janice Joplin who dies, but there's quite a few other people in Los Angeles as well who'd scored the same smack.
This did a radical transformation in my understanding of Janice's death. She was ambushed. She was expecting the heroin to be a lot weaker. And this super strong stuff put her out like that.
We can never know what was going through Janice's mind on the night that she died. But I believe that the cause of her death is that of an accidental drug overdose of an incredibly pure heroin that her body simply couldn't deal with.
After examining all the evidence in Janice Joplin's autopsy, Dr. Hunter can finally piece together the story of her last hours.
The heroin is first mixed with water so that it can be injected. Within seconds, it is coursing through her bloodstream. Almost immediately, she begins to experience the initial euphoric effects. As the heroin is broken down further into morphine, Janice starts to feel an extreme form of relaxation and a decreased sense of pain. But the super strength heroin starts to hijack her body's central nervous system. Unable to cope with the extreme sedative effect, her breathing begins to dramatically slow down. Janice's brain is now starved of oxygen, and she passes out. Her respiratory rate continues to drop. She is now only breathing 6 times a minute, but her heart continues to pump blood to her lungs, leading to a buildup of fluid called pulmonary edema. She's on a rapidly downward spiral. Her only hope is if she's found now. Ever-decreasing oxygen supply means Janice's organs begin to shut down. She lapses into a coma. Her fluid-filled lungs cease to function. Her heart stops beating. And she dies.
As Joplin once said, maybe I won't last as long as other singers, but I think you can destroy yourself today by worrying about tomorrow.
After Janice's death, her second solo album, Pearl, was released. It went straight to number one in the charts and stayed there for 9 weeks. It was her most successful album.
I think Janice just decided excess was her motto, you know. I mean, she didn't want to miss anything. She wanted to get everything out of life that she could. And trying everything and experimenting with everything and risking quite a lot was, it was part of who she was.
In death, Janis had one last surprise for her friends.
The thing I remember was there was a party. She had drawn up a will with her attorney, and she had left a couple of $1,000 in her will to have a party in the event of her death. Everybody got high and drank a lot and got kind of, you know, tried to get crazy and have fun because that's what she would have wanted.
My advice is everyone come to California and I'll buy you a drink.
Remember her as a musical genius. And remember her kindly. Because she was an important human being. An important person.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.